Well, I desire your prayers. I'd like to look at a scripture in the 24th chapter of Proverbs. I'd like to just go through these scriptures a little bit, maybe, and see what we can get out of them. 24 and 30 of Proverbs says, I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding. Back in the days of Solomon, there was a lot of emphasis put on the ownership of land, and the value of what land meant to a person's life. It was their livelihood. It was what brought blessings to them. They was able to use the land in order to raise things, to keep things. It was part of their industry. In a lot of senses, by Solomon's time, the land had been given, worked, and handed down. It was God's heritage to the people. When you remember when they came into the Canaan land and subdued it, God had given them by tribes, by nation, by their tribes, different ones. He had given them the boundaries. I think one of the expressions of the psalmist was that let my lines fall in pleasant places. Something that affecting what he was referring to was is that, Lord, you choose my habitation. You give me my inheritance, that it would be what fits my life, what I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to do and what I'm supposed to accomplish, where I'm supposed to live my life. Lord, I don't know. But you know, so allow my lines to fall in that. Another one said, give me not riches nor poverty, but that which is convenient for me. Give me the thing that best suits my life. And in the day of Solomon, there was a prestige even to land and a man that would get the ultimate from it. To be able to use your acreage with industry and work and with the Lord's blessings on you, you could bring forth something that would be not only a blessing to you, but to your family, to those that was around you. You would be able to hand something worthwhile down to someone else. And in this day, as I said, much of this was already handed down, and Solomon walked by, he said, the land, the field of the slothful. And he went by the man, didn't have any understanding, a void of understanding. And he looked at it, and he gained something by that. What was the understanding? This is what the understanding is. Is that somewhere in life, you're going to need something that has to do with today. It's just life. It is the law of sowing and reaping. You plant today, but your expectation isn't today. You don't sow with the hopes that before the sun goes down you'll reap. You sow in the idea that if I sow today, in days to come, and the law of sowing and reaping is that if I sow much, I'll reap much. If I sow little, I'll reap little. But what I sow is compounded. I don't sow a few grains of seed to expect to get a few grains of seed. I plant a few grains of seed in expectation of many ears of corn. That is the law of sowing and reaping. But if I don't do anything, I'll not have anything. Nothing is what I'll get when I sow nothing. if I don't put out anything, and he went by what was given to a man by heritage. Someone had come in and seen the value of the land and cleared it. Picked out the stones. He cleared off the brambles, the bushes, the briars, and he made a profitable field of it. But do you know that everything that's like that must be kept like that? That's true. It's true in the natural. It will be true in the spiritual also. That what's given, the field that was cleared, do you know that the field will have its nature to it? Whatever was in it when it was cleared is what will come back in it if it's not kept cleared. Do you know that's true in spiritual life? I'm going to tell you, whatever the Lord delivered you from, whatever the Lord took you out of in your life, is the potential of what you would be without keeping God in your life. That is exactly what you'll go back to be, but probably many times worse, but you'll go back to that eventually. So Solomon walked by the field of the slothful, and he looked at it, and no doubt his mind was is that, what is happening here? What is going on here in this world, in this life? Somebody handed them something that was precious, but they didn't keep it. And the man, void of understanding, really resonates with me, because the man void of understanding doesn't realize, he doesn't really know and understand what is going to happen to him. He doesn't realize the nature of things. He doesn't realize, you know, we live in a world that is for the moment type world. We live in a world very much it's for the moment. If per se someone has a big windfall, or even a medium windfall, or a small windfall, they get some money, they get something. Do you know that most of the people in the world immediately says, what and how much can I buy with this? Do you know that's the way people deal with it? They say immediately. I've seen it over and over again. People that say, what can I do with this money? Just as fast as I can. What am I going to do with it? Not realizing of what that really is. No understanding. It doesn't seem to be understanding. I know some folks that would every tax time they would get back this large return. Well, they owed people. They was in debt to people. And they couldn't even monthly hardly survive. But when they would get this windfall, many times thousands of dollars they would get, they would just go crazy. They would say, oh, it'd be nice to have some new furniture. And it would be nice to have this and have that. And within a month, weeks maybe, they would be right back to where they was at, having their debtors come to them and say, you owe me. Give us our money. You owe us. And they'd be saying, I don't have any money. This is people that's void of understanding, realizing that tomorrow will come for you. Tomorrow will have expectations for you when it comes. This isn't crossing the scripture that says, take no thought for tomorrow. It's talking about a worried or an anxious thought. God will take care. But this is the way God takes care many times. You know that we need to have industry about our lives. We need to have industry. We need to have thought. We need to consider the idea that if tomorrow comes, I may have to eat tomorrow. I may have to do something tomorrow. But he says this man was void of understanding. But let's go farther, because the law of sowing and reaping isn't always in the negative context, but it's very much in the positive context. Do you know what you sow today? That's what you're going to eat of later. What you do with what you're doing with your life now. Do you know decisions that you make now? And I want to say to the young people, do you know that decisions that you make now about your life can affect your marriage, and you're not married? And so, in reality, I can say to you, the decisions you make now is going to affect your husband or your wife And you would say, well, I don't have a husband and a wife. But if you're going to have one, the decisions that you're making will have an effect on that. Even the decisions now. So as Solomon walks by the field of the slothful, and he sees a man that's void of understanding and realizes that this man that isn't in his time, in his season, the season of doing, he isn't doing. And he's allowing his field to grow up. The field that if industry was applied, if work was applied, that field would be clear. That field would not only be cleared, but depending on the time of the season, that it would have its plants growing. And he would and nature would look and say of that man that his corn was up so high and he's certain high, and you'd look at that and say, the nature of this man is in weeks and months to come that this man is going to eat the fat of his labor. He's going to be able to eat of what he's doing. But this man is also going to eat of his doings too. He's going to be eating briars. He's going to be eating brambles. He's going to be wondering where the next... Folks, listen, we live in a world that somehow got into the mentality, a bad, wrong mentality about life. And somehow is that work is bad. And that you're supposed to get all that you can get by being handed that. Folks, there's nothing wrong with being in a place, I mean, with being charitable and having charity, all those things are wonderful things, but there is a principle that is almost lost in this modern world. Do you know that we're better off as a human being to apply ourselves to work, to labor, to help, to do? Do you know that we're better off as a person when we do these things? And this is what the man void of understanding could not realize is that my character is better. I'm a better human being. I take care of the things that I need to take care of in life, and therefore there is something about me that gives me the respect, the self-respect, to be able to reach to others, help others, be what I should be. Oh Lord, truly, allow our lines to fall to us in pleasant places. Give me the land that I own, and help me with Your grace and Your ability to make the most of this land that You've given me. Now, I know I'm talking a lot in the natural, but the implication is spiritual. The implication is spiritual. I can't always rely on somebody else's prayer. Now, is that true? Isn't that true? I'm not to always rely on somebody. I've got to learn how to do it myself. My field has to be planted. My field has to bring forth some fruit in it somewhere. And do you know, if we're not careful, the mentality of the world will get in our spiritual disposition until what I do is, I'm a charity case. I'm a man void of understanding that always, and I know these people, folks, that always the saints are coming by and always lifting up and always working, and it takes laborers galore to even keep them propped up, keep them helped up, always, and they're glad to do it. People that's always working, trying to get them up till they can get a footing on themselves, and when they're let go, they wilt back down into their lazy chair. Solomon went by this and said, the man's void of understanding, because wisdom would suggest to this man that if you sit in your easy chair through the seasons of labor, then when harvest comes, you're going to be in trouble. One day follows another, folks. One day follows another. And another, and you'll look at life one of these days and say, when your hair starts to turn gray, when you look into that mirror and you see the hairs are graying and life has spent itself, and I've spent most of my life, and you'll look, if you're not careful, you're going to look and say, and what did I do? Where did I plant? Where did I sow? What labors did I do? It's fleeting, folks. Life is so fleeting. So the wise man walks by this field. He says in, lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof. Folks, our disposition from nature, this is scriptural, are that we are conceived in sin. We are formed in iniquity. We are from Adam. We have an Adamic nature. We have a sin nature in us. It is what will promote a lie in every child. Every child will get to the point that it'll have a sense of deception about it. Every one of them does. They're also, the children will have a sense of selfishness from the beginning. How many children, maybe a rare few, but some, well, they'll still have it, but there'll be a rare few that might get a toy and reach it to the other children. But most of the time, they'll go and grab a toy, and as soon as a child will get another toy, they'll go grab that one too. You ever heard them say, mine? Mine. Mine. It's one of the first words that really come out real clear. Mine. It's mine. That's my toy. That's my space. That's my things. Why? Because that's the nature of it. Do you know what a field... You can take any of these fields. You got some donkeys and some horses out there that keeps these crop down, and these goats still want... I've seen those goats, they really do a good job. You put all that out there, and you can go out and clear that. But if you was to remove all that off of this land here, you move it off, it wouldn't be very long. It would take time. It'd take time. Sure, you come back next year, and there would be a few extra thistles and things, and you'd still have a field. But you know, you give that time and that grass would be whipped out. Do you know what's profitable would be whipped out? And there comes a time that it's mixed, isn't it? And there's a time that the field becomes a mixed bag. There's a little of this and a little of that. But you know, in the process of time, given left to its own, these fields will grow back to their nature. They will grow back to the wild. They'll go back to the thorns and the thistles and the things that's what I'm going to tell you. That seed and that part is in the ground. Yeah. It's in the nature of it. It would grow back that way. Last time we was in Guthrie at their spring meeting, the camp meeting out there, Linda and I needed to go to the dollar store. She went down to the dollar store. She went in and I was sitting out in the van. And there was three little boys, probably all of them under the age of 10 and under. And they was out there, and boy, they was having them a time. They had run into the door store, and they had run back out, and down the sidewalk they'd come, and they was running around the car. And I looked at them, and I thought, boy, these boys are having a time. Well, just now, I'm assuming the mother comes out of that store, and I mean, she jumps out there, and I was obvious to her. I mean, I was set. She couldn't have helped but seen me. We was only a little bit apart. And there was other people there too. And she jumped out of that store and she squared her feet up. And boy, she got the cursing and a swearing. And she was a hollering at them boys. And they come running back and she went to biffing them. And they was covering their heads and a squalling. And she stomped and snorted and bucked. And around there she went and around. And she was them boys and getting them in there. And I sat there thinking, what thorns? How ugly. And she didn't care. I mean, you know, some people, they put on the deal when there's other people looking and, oh, they got caught. That just got caught. She didn't care. She just went at it. And I looked at that and I thought, that's what happens. That's where it goes to. You know, the Lord's got a perfect remedy for that. The Lord can clear that field up and bring forth in that the fruit of that field, but that's not the analogy of what He's talking about. What the analogy He's talking about is the analogy of someone that has got something, they've had it in their life, they got it in their life, it's been built, it's been handed down, they got something precious, the work's been done. Folks, a lot of the work's been done for us. All people have lived life, give us testimonies. The saints have given us testimonies of God's blessings, God's healing, God's working, God's miracles. We have a heritage of so much of this stuff. It'll grow up on you. You can know all that and still get thorns in your life. It's not like there's nothing you can do. I got this now, and now I've got it made. Solomon came by a man that one time was very prosperous. And he looked at it. And he said, this man's void of understanding. Because what's going to grow back in this is going to go back to its original state. Eventually, things will wear on it until it will go back that way. And so, now instead of the beautiful crops and the fruit, the blessing of keeping people alive and nourished and his own somewhat peace of mind and state of being has been disrupted by thorns and thistles. And he's allowing it to happen. Never understanding just what this is going to do. Folks, sin is a reproach to any people. Sin is a reproach to all people. The wicked shall be turned into hell, and all nations that forget God. Don't allow your land to go back to thorns and thistles. And it says, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. All right, a man that had the vineyard that was void of understanding, a vineyard. Oh, what a blessing, a vineyard. See, today, you know, I got two or three grapevines just because I like to fool with plants and all. And we get a few, I'll pick a few grapes off of them. I don't tend them well. Just don't have, we want grapes, we go to the store. They got places in California that just, there's thousands of acres of well-tended. And they ship them, so we go to the store, we get our grapes. That's the way we do it. This was a little different back then. This vineyard was something that was going to bless them. A vineyard. Planted. Made. Somebody had enough mind to put a wall. A stone wall. But what's a wall for a vineyard? I mean, it's not like a vine will jump up and leave. What do you need a vine? I mean, a vineyard for? I mean, put a wall or a fence around. I mean, yeah, you keep your goats in because you don't want them wandering off. You got to keep the horses' boundaries or they'd take off. But what are you going to do with a vineyard? What do you need a wall for it? It's not to keep them in. It's not to keep them in. They'll stay right where they're planted. And there's things that want in there. There's things that's going to affect this. So wise men looked at it and said, there's creatures. There's things that's going to try to attack my prosperity. My fruit, the thing that's going to bring the blessing to me, and I can do all of this and do all this, but yet, if I don't protect it, the idea of protection, folks, it's kind of like saying the precious. The wall means something inside it's precious, valuable. I build walls. Why do I build walls? To keep things from running it. That's why I do it. Have everybody ever challenge you on why you do what you do? Well, that's why I do what I do. I got something precious, and I aim to hold it. I aim to keep it, so I build a wall. You might not need a wall where I need a wall, but I got things coming in that bothers it, so I'm going to do something about it. And I build a wall about it. Nope, don't go there, won't go there. Don't do that. Why? I need a wall. Need a wall up. The wall's valuable against the things that would attack a vineyard. Because there's creatures that would like to come in and destroy. Well, they ain't coming in to destroy the vineyard. They're coming in to do what they do. Eat it up. That's what they want to do. So there was a stone wall. And he says that the stone wall thereof was broken down. I've noticed something even with stone. On the top of the mountains back at home, there's a place called the Snowy Mountain. On the top of that, there's some big rock formations. You can go back there and look at those rock formations. You'll look and see where there's grooves cut around in them. And a rock's pretty solid, but at the foot of the rocks, on the top of the mountain, is sand. That sand used to be that rock. But the wind, and up on top of that mountain, it can get really gusty, and the rain and the wind that beat upon it and cut it, it grooves it, and even stone wears out. And even that needs to be considered. That it needs to be replaced. It needs to be managed. But what happened to the man's stone wall? I don't imagine something coming plowing through there and just plowed it over. What happened was a stone fell out of the wall. A stone fell out of the wall. The diligent man says, we'll put that stone back in the wall. But a slothful man and one void of understanding says, it's only one. It doesn't mean a whole lot to have one wall fall out of a stone wall. So that's not very important. But one stone's followed by another. You know, stones lock each other in. When one stone falls, it gives leeway for another stone to fall. But the wall, there's still a wall. But in the process of time, the wall falls down. So consider the wall. You know what our walls do? They protect us. What happens when the wall's down? It gives the regress and egress of anything to go through it. Rite of passage. In, to, out of. Without restraint. In and out. In and out. That's what the devil does to people that aren't diligent. He egresses and regresses at his biddings. He goes in to disrupt. He goes in to harm. He goes in to hurt. The thing that was made to be a blessing to a man, and what was his? His wife. His family. His children. The things that was in his world. Now the walls are down and in comes anything and everything. Are we just to say that, and I know God's got great grace, and God applies that grace to us when we're in the place of needing grace. God has grace for any situation. But not when we create our environment. We create an environment and let loose of those things, and now there's such disruption. Why are we regularly praying for the broken homes? Because of the transgressions, the allowing of the devil into and out of lives. And what is he going to do? He's going to come and destroy the fruit of the land. And so why is the... And when Solomon looked at that and he saw the wall broke down, he knew that the end was near. Because there's no way to keep a vineyard with the wall torn down. Because the wild beasts are going to go in and trample and devour and eat up the precious plants that brings life. Because that's what the food is. It's life. And it would be destroyed. So, Solomon considered these things. Said, then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Listen, it's as if Solomon says, I didn't glimpse this in passing. I stood and studied. I pondered it with much desire to know and to consider and to wonder if there isn't a lesson in life for me. Is there anything here that would be valuable to me to know? And I want to tell us today, please take note of this. Because there's something very valuable in here for you to know. The kingdom suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. It was that way when it was created, when it was made, when the Lord secured it, it was that way, and it's that way today. You won't fall into heaven. You won't happen to get there. You'll give your all for it. It will become your precious, most precious commodity. And that's the way you'll gain it. When that becomes my most important thing. And so again, I think we can say, Lord, help us. Let our lines fall in pleasant places. A prayer that says, am I where I'm supposed to be, Lord? Have I wandered outside the lines of my habitation? Am I where I'm supposed to be to bear fruit? Lord, help me to know and to consider this well, to know what I'm supposed to be doing and how I'm supposed to be doing it. And Lord, help me to have the desire in 2012 with punch buttons and modern technology. Hey, modern technology is a blessing, isn't it? Used correctly, it's a blessing. You're getting this is getting recorded today, but modern technology, a little instrument sitting here on the podium, going to pick up everything I say. It's going to be recorded right there. Modern technology. Within a few minutes, if we had the technology here, and I'm assuming it's here, you could have this spread across the country in moments. You realize that? In moments? My voice being spoken here could be transmitted to the world in moments. Technology's not a bad thing. But Lord, help us to know how to put walls on it. Help it to know how to block the things that need to be blocked in my life. This is my land. This is my life. I'm caring for my wife and my life and my children and those that are around me. I need to know how to bring forth fruit of my field in 2012, my life. I need to know how to keep out the bugs and the insects and the things that would harm and hurt it. And yet I need to have industry. That's passion and will to do whatever I need to do. My Uncle Kenneth, he liked to raise a garden. My dad raised a garden. We raised a garden at home. My Uncle Kenneth, he liked to raise a garden. My Uncle Kenneth come down to the house one time. Dad was out in his garden, and my uncle come and looked at that garden, and he told my dad, he said, well, it's no wonder you can raise such a good garden down here. Your garden don't grow weeds. My dad said, my hoe's what keeps the weeds out of my garden. He was saying, boy, at my place, and he was right, the corn was this high and the weeds was this high. You can plant, folks. You can go out and plant your garden. There is a law to sowing and reaping. You can go and plant. I'm going to tell you, you just go out there and throw seeds anywhere and see how much fruit you get. I'll challenge you to just go get you a real good garden going. Go graze you a big old field full of corn. And just by throwing the seeds out there. Ain't going to happen. You know what's going to happen? Nature's going to happen. And nature competes. And folks, listen. We need something more in this time we live in than to fight our own natures all the time. We need the power of God's Spirit to help us in this life. Because this continual competition between my flesh and the Spirit and doing right is like casting seed out on the ground and expecting full fruit to come from. Saying you ain't going to get some fruit. You might get a little nubbins that you'll peel back and eat on, but you're not going to get anything that's really good fruit. So Solomon said, I considered this. I considered it well. I looked and pondered and took it into mind that what kind of value can I have? Where should I build my walls and how strong, how high should they be? How strong should they be? I was on a surveying job one time. I was on the top of the mountain back there. A great big beautiful farm had been put back there way back at the turn of the last century. Big beautiful barn back there. I did not know it existed back here. It was between Golly and Elk River. Wasn't anything for miles around. They said the people that lived there would come off the mountain once a month to go to town. And I imagine that was true. It was before vehicles. And that probably was a long journey for them. It was a beautiful place back there. But they had fences. Rail fences. Split rail fences. 8 and 10 feet high. I said, well, what are they raising up here, kangaroos? What would you need a fence that high for? Well, I tried to find out why they would have built a fence like that. Nobody in my generation knew. And finally, I was talking to an old timer. And asked him about them. And he said, oh, yeah. I said, well, it's fairly obvious why the fences were so high. He said, we don't get snows like we used to. It said it used to be the snows was so deep back there on the mountain, as their cattle and stuff would walk the fences, packing it down, they would get higher and higher and higher up, and finally there would be no fence at all. Once the snow would freeze and melt, and it would become very crested and hard, and before long they could just go off anywhere because there was no fence to keep them. So they built an enormous fence higher and higher. They had understanding of where they was living, and I say today, build your fence as high as it needs to be built. Build your protection as strong and as high as it needs to be. And if it says, well, Brother Marty don't do that, don't pay attention to what Brother Marty do. Build it for your life, the protection of your own life, your own weaknesses, your own places. If it needs to be 10 feet high, make it 10 feet high. And somebody will look in the springtime and say, idiot, what a fool. What a waste of energy. Build a fence 10 feet high and the only thing you've got in there is a few sheep. Wintertime comes, you're not a person void of understanding now. You're a person void of understanding. And how many Christians through the ages have been run down in the good times for what their life was, but sought after when the hard times come? We need somebody that knows how to pray. We need somebody that's got a contact with God. They run into the shelters of our fortified places. Why? Because my walls have been successful in keeping the enemy out of my life. And so I am not only building walls for myself, I'll build them for the next generation. I'll build them for my neighbors. I'll build them for the one that was being ridiculing me. I'll build them for the ones that don't like me. But I'll build them too. Because you know what? That's what Jesus did. He done it for those that was not like Him. But He built them and He made a place that was a blessing. Folks, there may become a time in your life. Be faithful. There may become a time in your life that the ones you called enemies will run to you to say, would you help? Then I saw and considered it well. I looked upon it and received instruction. Yet a little sleep. A little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. I wonder why he put it that way. I think there's particular points for this language. He said a little sleep. He did not say a drunken stupor. He said a little sleep. You know why? Because a little sleep leads to more sleep. A little inactivity leads to a lot of inactivity. So he says it from its beginning to where you and I can understand the danger of a little sleep. The scripture says, woe unto them who are at ease in Zion. Woe! Why woe? Asleep. Because it's a dangerous place to be asleep. You're alive, but you're not aware. You're void of understanding. So a little sleep, a little slumber. If you can get his image, a little folding of the hands. Taking my ease. So shall thy poverty come as one that traveleth. One that traveleth. You know, no matter how slow something's moving, it'll get there if it keeps going. The old saying is, you keep going the way you're going, you're going to get there. And regardless of your speed, you will make it to where you're going. As one that traveleth means that they will get to their destination eventually. Some quickly. Some throw it all away and go into instant shipwreck. Some pull their sails down and drift with the ocean current. And it gradually takes them to the same inevitable shipwreck. But it's one that traveleth. It'll go. It'll get there. Poverty will come upon that one that folds his hand. Oh, he may have had a greater inheritance to blow, and it may take him longer to blow it. But he'll blow it. There was a Powerball lottery this last year, sometime in this past year, that got to be about $300 million. Now, my numbers might be off. I don't remember it exactly, but it was huge amount of money. And there was a scene, an article that said, why you don't want to win this lottery. And they gave some examples of what happened to people that won the lottery. And I know you could say that to people and they'd say, yeah, right. Why I wouldn't want to win it? No reason. But I'm going to tell you, when you start looking into the lifestyles of the people, most people that would win that would need $300 million to last them. It's incredible what these people... You can take these poor people without understanding and give them money and they don't know how to even deal with it. And the amount of corruption that they get in their life, there was incident after incident after incident of people that won lotteries that totally destroyed themselves with the wealth that they had gotten. Totally destroyed themselves. But poverty comes. I heard another statistic that I believe to be true. They said if you was to take the wealth of the United States, throw it into a pot, and divide it equally out to every man, woman, boy, and girl, that within 10 years, the one that has the wealth now would have the wealth again. You know why? Industry. That's why. A mind of managing. A mind of considering. How valuable it is in this life? It's valuable. But when it comes to spiritual things, it's of utmost importance to manage our spiritual lives and not run ourselves into poverty. Because those that just allow it to go, those that don't give effort and energy into your spiritual life, won't have a spiritual life. It will be robbed from you. It will be taken from you. You will squander it and spend it. Sir, today my burden is, let's consider the day that we live in. Consider the dangers of the time. Consider the field of the slothful. Consider the man that has the vineyard that's void of understanding. Let's consider what we look as Solomon did. Lord, help me to consider those that run to the entertainments of the world, to the things of the world. Lord, help me to see what happens to those things and to adjust my life accordingly. Because, you know what? I want to be faithful. I want to be faithful to the Lord. I see my life as a vapor. Listen, that vapor's thinning out. And I feel it. So I want to be faithful to the Lord. You pray for me.